Hey guys, today's episode we have Harish Uthikumar from the channel Curious Harish. He's a content creator on YouTube as well as an entrepreneur. His company BlueLearn got a funding of over $50,000 from Lightspeed Ventures. Today, he shares his experience with us. A few of them including life after getting funded, identifying good investors and employees, acquisition and much more. So stay tuned as this episode is going to be a lot of fun. With that, let's enjoy the video. Welcome Harish, it's a pleasure to have you on our podcast. So just to begin with, wanted to know a little more about yourself. So when was it exactly when you wanted to know, like you want to become an entrepreneur, and how did this idea of becoming an entrepreneur start in your life?
Yeah, sure. So I mean, I really feel that there's no specific tipping point when you really want to start building something. It's a very gradual process. So, you know, you're passionate about a problem, you start thinking about the problem, and then you start taking small steps, which may or may not lead to a startup, right? At least in my case, you know, I saw that COVID hit, and then a lot of college students were just stuck at home. The problem that they faced was it was hard for college students to network and learn something together. So we were like, hey, why not build a Discord server where people can come in, have a chat, and learn something together. At that time, it was just a Discord server. There was no intention of building a startup. But then as eventually we progressed, we learned from this crowd. We got a bunch of insights about, you know, what products can we build for this particular community. And then eventually we turned that into like a startup. So I would say, you know, just be passionate about a particular problem. Could be in education, could be in community, could be in healthcare, whatever. And then start thinking about ideas on how exactly can you give value to that particular problem. And then like startups and businesses and NGOs are just layers on top of it. Ultimately, it's just you trying to, you know, supply something to the market.
Correct. And also like, if I'm not wrong, BlueLearn just received around $450,000funding from
Lightspeed Ventures.
So, you know, as viewers, we are really interested in knowing, like, how does a typical day in BlueLearn look like?
I mean, doesn't make a huge difference. The difference between a funded startup and a non-funded startup is not huge. But then what happens is when you've raised venture capital money, you have to grow really fast, right? And that's the reason why investors put in money. So if you're growing at, say, 20-25% in terms of the user count or in terms of, you know, your revenue, then it's good sign. Then you're a venture backable business. So yeah, I mean, it's all about building things faster and better than your peers, because at least in the space that we are in, there are a bunch of other people with millions of dollars in their bank accounts, right? And as a small early stage startup, our vision or our day should look as if, you know, we are building 10 products at the same pace as a large startup that's building one product a day. Like that should be the intensity in case you want to compete in this market. But yeah, I mean, at least for us, we don't take too much stress. It's pretty simple. We don't have any work timings. Like at 9:30 a.m., everyone just meets and they're like, hey, I'm going to work on this task for the day. And that's pretty much it. Like no one asks any question. And then at the end of the day, we just have another scrum meeting where everyone says if they were able to complete the tasks that they stayed in the morning or not. So that's pretty much it. That's a simple way through which we function. On Mondays, we have something called ideation scrum, where we plan out the entire week. And then on Fridays, we do a review scrum where we check, you know, how the last week was, what can we learn from it, and how our next week should look like. So that's pretty much broadly how we function as a team.
I mean, like that's right now and today, I believe is the best approach, because, you know, giving everyone their own flexibility, you know, increases their, you know, productivity and also the creativity. So when we talk about creativity, you know, there are many of the people out there want to become an entrepreneur, but do not have ideas, or maybe, you know, somewhat the idea what they have in their mind is already out there in the market. So how do you suggest for them to come up with new ideas for their business?
So as I said before, right, it's not about the idea. Like I can have an idea of, say, you know, building another tripod company, but that's just an idea. Like I'm not even sure if the market needs it, right? A lot of people say when you become a startup founder, you're your own boss and all of those things. But then ultimately the market is your boss. So even if you're the fanciest entrepreneur, even if you're Kunal Shah, and if you build something that no one wants, and something that no one is going to purchase ever, then it's kind of pointless, right? So it's more about looking at what the market needs and then serving for that. Like, let's take an example of insurance. Buying insurance today is hard AF, right? Everyone's struggling. There's a lot of paperwork to be done, still manual. It's a stress. No one really likes buying insurance. So startups like Bima Pay or Policy Bazaar come into play and simplify that particular issue. So it's all about, like, India in itself is such a vast country. There are so many problems ranging from healthcare, logistics, education, you know, you could be construction. There are just so many problems out there, right? That you can just pick one of the problems that you're really passionate about, think about it over a week, and then start slowly getting involved in making it 10x better and reducing the impact of the problem.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, like, you know, solving the real-time world problem is, you know, when once you identify the problem, you'll easily be able to solve it. So, I mean, like, also a lot of new entrepreneurs out there, new startups, usually face this problem of, you know, reaching out to the new customers. So what marketing strategies do you personally use at Bloomberg?
Oh, we use a community-first approach. So what that means is, hey, you know, we are a social product. We want feedback right from our consumers. So we build a community, as in, you know, people interacting with each other. We organize events for them every single day. We are just ideating and looking for ways through which these guys, students in our case, can interact with each other. This could be quizzes, gaming tournaments, music concerts, open mics, someone teaching to code, someone teaching to design, whatever gives them enough value for them to come back on the platform. Like, that's the approach that we've been taking. Just getting as many students as possible under our umbrella, so that later on, in case, you know, we find that we could build something for them, then going on and building on top of it. So yeah, it's been a community first approach. So Discord servers, Telegram groups, and WhatsApp groups have been, like, really good growth channels for us. And I think even moving forward, that's what we'll be doubling down on.
Amazing. So, like, everything boils down to, you know, helping out your community and, you know, serving for them. So, like, if I could ask, who was your, you know, biggest inspiration while, you know, who's an entrepreneur, and who did you look up to, your mentor maybe, or someone who guided you?
Yeah, so, I mean, I really look up to people around me. Like, I would never say that Elon Musk or Steve Jobs is my inspiration. Now, obviously, you can take a lot, you can learn a lot from these guys. But when it comes to inspirations, it's usually people around me, right? Like Mohit and Gaurav from Stratzy, or Mehul Mohan from CodeDam, probably startups that you haven't even heard of. But these are people from my college. These are people who are at a stage similar to mine. And therefore, for me, it's much easier to make my decisions if I ask them, versus asking Kunal Shah or, like, an Elon Musk, right? So people who are in the same boat as me, but are hustling, they're building, shipping products every single day, solving real world problems. Those are the kind of people I look up to. So yeah, mostly college alumni. These are the two people that I just spoke of, Rahul Mathur from Bima Pay, or Anirudh Singla and Rishabh Shekhar from Pepper Content, Aves from Pixel, a bunch of these guys who are from my college.
Okay, amazing. And also, like, you've been fortunate enough to have these people around you in your college. But for the people who are really do not have such people in their circles, so how would you, you know, advise them? How can they look up?
So yeah, this is a very valid question, right? Because Bits Pilani had a very good community. Bits Pilani had a very good network. And that's what we want to democratize through Blue Learn, right? The community aspect of college, where you are around smart people and these smart people encourage you to become even better. So if you're not from a good college, or if you're, you know, at a place where you don't get the exposure that you should be getting, then that's the exact problem that we're trying to solve at Blue Learn. So entrepreneurship, for example, we have a startup club on Blue Learn where, you know, we have contacts with VCs, we organize meetups and things like that. So imagine every weekend, a venture capitalist from a top Silicon Valley firm is coming and teaching you a particular concept about startups. We get top founders like, you know, Sambhav Jain from FamPay, or, you know, Udemy's founder Gagan Biani. We get folks like them who, you know, sort of give talks and give you the kind of exposure required to get there in the ecosystem. And plus networking events, co-founder dating, or just keep validating your idea by being among people who are interested in startups. Like, that's what we wanted to provide. And everything and anything that normal colleges cannot provide, that's what we're trying to do digitally using Tula.
Correct. Now that we got a little insights with Tula, could you please help us with like, who are your immediate competitors and how do you plan to differentiate, Tula from them?
Yeah. So, I mean, the way you look at competition right now is, it's like different departments within Blue Learn have different competitions, right? For example, if I talk about the English club of Blue Learn, we're competing with Cambly, we're competing with Cambridge, we're competing with, VIP Kids or a bunch of these English startups. If we talk about, say, the entrepreneurship one, then we're competing with Leap Club, we're competing with, there's this BNI network, there's Della, Leaders Club, a bunch of these other organizations inside entrepreneurship. So here's the thing, like the more clubs we launch, the more competition we'll have from similar players in the ecosystem. And that's kind of a risky place to be in because more competition is not good. So our plan is to sort of build a community, but in terms of monetization, we'll be doubling down on just few communities that we are really passionate about and few of them which we think can do well in the future, right? So like if we start a coding community and start monetizing on it, it might not be a good idea because anyone can learn how to code from YouTube. Like it's not really a big thing nowadays. So yeah, just looking into these trends and monetizing on the right communities and doubling down on that would be the focus. But then that doesn't mean we stop creating communities. There'll be a coding community, there'll be a design community, but all of them will be like for free and it'll just be open for all.
So like, what would be the top three communities that are at your priority list right now?
At this point in time, I would say English, entrepreneurship, and blockchain.
Oh, okay. That's amazing. Even I'm personally interested in blockchain. I keep, doing courses and analysis. Like, amazing. And also, like, what is there in your pipeline for your future? How do you plan to expand your company? How do you actually plan? Like, every startup wants to expand, and but actually getting down to pen and paper and groundwork. So take us through your future pipeline and what your plan.
Yeah. So right now we're just figuring out the right product that we want to build and that will sort of be there for the next 6 months, 1 year. So still in the product building phase, I would say. But right after that, it's about the scalability part, right? How do we go from 50,000 users right now to 100,000 users? How do we get more installs on the beta app and things like that? So I would say the problem would be, you can divide the problem into two parts right now. The first one is figuring out the product. What exactly are you going to build? What exactly are you going to sell? What exactly are you going to monetize? What exactly is the other users going to find value in? That's the first part of it. The second part of it is like the scalability issue. Like how do you scale up marketing and grow channels to go from 100,000 to a million users and further? So yeah, these are definitely big questions and not problems that you can solve in a day using pen and paper. A lot of these would only come when you go out there, execute, make mistakes and learn from it. So yeah, it's just this experimentation phase that we are in right now where just trying whatever we can, just going all in and seeing what works and then learning from that and doubling down on it. And at the same time, you'll have a lot of things which would not work and then just going over that part and just putting that aside.
Right. So as we previously also mentioned about the capital venture that Blue Learn just recently got. So how would you help our viewers who are struggling for their capital venture yet, and how can they approach, those companies who can help them for their capital ventures and fundings?
See, venture capital works in a, they'll put money on the winners, right? Like people who are really solving a problem, people who really have some sort of traction in terms of users or revenue, because you got to look at it from their perspective as well. It's a risky bet. No one gives free money and everyone wants to bet on something promising. So if you just have an idea, then it might not be a good idea to just go and pitch because more often than not, they'll say no. But if you're building something so cool that everyone's talking about, then a lot of VC firms would approach you instead directly, right? Instead of you going out there and approaching them. So I think that's a pretty sweet stage to be in where you're building something that's hype worthy and people are actually talking about it and firms come to know about your product, like that's the good part to be in. But at the same time, if you think that, hey, that's not the kind of product that we have, it's not a lot of people know about it, but we're doing good in terms of revenue and traction, then just sort of go on these VC firms website. There's this website called Crunchbase. Just go there, look for VCs, email them, and they'll be more than happy to talk to you in case it's interesting.
Okay, so I mean, like, I'm pretty sure there were some red flags and green flags that you looked for while finding an investor. So could you please take us through what are those red and
green flags? This is good. Yeah. One of the naive mistakes that first-time founders would do, and I'm a first-time founder, is that taking money from anyone and everyone, right? Because you'll be like, oh, I'm in college. These guys are giving me money, 50 lakhs. Oh my God. And just taking that money, not realizing the responsibilities that come with it, not realizing the paperwork and contracts and clauses that come with it, right? And I think that'll be a very huge mistake to make. We were about to make a lot of these mistakes, but then since we had good advisors, we did not. But then be very careful about whom you're getting this money from, right? There are some investors who will be super liberal. They'll allow you to do your own thing. There'll be some investors who will interfere a lot and mess a lot of things up for you. So it all depends on, what kind of investors you take. I would really say do not take money from desi investors, as in like people into traditional businesses and people who don't understand how, most startups work. Like if they are just concerned about your P&L statement, and they're like, why are you making so much of losses? Why aren't you making profits? If they're asking just questions like that and not understanding the big picture, then that's not really the kind of investors you want to work with. You want to work with investors who understand your vision. You want to work with investors who know what you're building and they themselves are really passionate about it, right? Investors who give ideas themselves and are like, hey, you can maybe try this out or that out. Not investors who put in money and they're like, achha, 10 saal baad double ho jayega mera paisa. Like that's not the kind of investors you want to work with. So be super careful, and also look into like the clauses that come with it. Like every time you raise an investment, there are different clauses, right? So there are few investors who even put your personal capacity at stake. Like in case things go wrong, you might personally be liable. That's not the kind of investors you want to work with, right? So be super careful about what kind of contracts you're signing. But then, top tier VCs, Sequoia, Nexus, Lightspeed, or Matrix, Shira, Tate kind of VCs, they are very liberal. They understand founders and they understand startups. So you should not have a major issue if you're raising from them. But if it's from a lower tier VC, then just read the contracts well, have a good lawyer, and then go about it.
Okay. And like, if we ask about the team, how you build, because in that initial stages, building the team who are the same page as you is very important. So what are the flags, red and green flags, look while you're making a team?
So I would say in terms of building a team, right, my philosophy has been to actually work with the person for at least 2-3 months before hiring them full time. And I really feel that's important because more than the skills that they bring in, it's about how well they gel in with you, right? How well do they work with you? You have to go through a lot of ups and downs. Like my co-founder and I, we fight. We might have said the worst things to each other, but then ultimately we just work together because the next day everything is pretty much sorted. So you don't want to work with people. You should be going through all these phases of ups and downs. If you're working with them for a month and if you think, oh wow, everything is nice, we're in la la land, and you end up hiring them full time and the second month things go down south, then you'll be in trouble, right? So to understand that person very well, it's like a marriage. It's like dating someone and understanding how good or bad of a person they are, right? So that's important. So like even right now when we are hiring full-time folks, we do a 1 month probation period where they work with us on a project, and only after that we end up hiring them. I mean, the probation is paid, of course, but like we don't be like it's full time. It's like, hey, look, it's a 1 month probation. We'll pay you XYZ, but only if we like your work and only if we think you fit in the team culture, you'll be continuing from the second month. So if they fit in the team culture for the first month, then second month we roll out a full time offer.
Okay. So I mean, like even the people would have, gauged a lot of insights on
Blue. Exactly. It goes both ways, right? It goes both ways. So even employees might be like, oh, that's probably not the company I want to work with. It's not the problem that I want to solve. It's not exciting enough. They have all the rights to say that as well. So it goes both ways.
Yeah. Also, like, you know, nowadays we hear in news, like, a lot of big companies, for example, like, why just we take, you know, they are acquiring a lot of startups. In future, do you have plans, you know, to accept offers from big companies when it comes to acquiring, or how should, you know, startup owners go about it?
I would say right now it's very early for us to even think about acquisition because we are in this product market fit journey. We can't sell a Discord server, right? That's not really the aim right now. Right now, we want to build something that's scalable, something that's solving a problem, something that's viral among students, and then scale it up. And when it comes to acquisitions, it's not as easy as it seems, right? It's first of all, India in itself is not a liquid market. Like M&As, mergers and acquisitions in India are not as common as it is in China or the US. India, when acquisition hota hai, toh it's in the news. It's like massive. But in the US, there are so many acquisitions happening every single day that a lot of them don't even show up in the news, right? So first of all, getting acquired in India is in itself a task. Secondly, you should never run a company with the aim of getting acquired. It's a thing that just happens. If you should be looking at your revenues, you should be looking at, you know, how well you can be, how well of a business can you be independently, no matter acquisition happens or not. And when offers are rolled out, then that's something that we can think about later, because even acquisition is not as simple as saying, hey, I'll give you X amount of money and you give me your product or team. It's not as easy as that, right? There are a lot of things that go behind it. Few founders are supposed to be working in that company for the next 5 years, or sometimes it's an acqui-hire offer where they just take your team. Sometimes they get the product, but not the team. Sometimes it's an IP acquisition where they just take your product. So it's a very complicated process. But yeah, I mean, sometime in the future, if it's something that aligns with our vision, like the company that's going to acquire us, if it's something that aligns with our vision, and if we really want to get acquired, then we might go ahead with it. But if we think that we can do well as an independent business and don't necessarily want to get acquired, we see an IPO or something in the future, then probably might not, but it's too early to even comment on those things.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, because, you know, many people, you know, they start because they feel like, you know, they want to get associated and acquired by big companies. I mean, that should not be the primary focus when you start.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you must be going a lot of lows and ups, and sometimes you want an unbiased opinion from someone from like a third party, someone from outside of Blue Learn. So who comes to your help at that time?
I told you about my inspirations, right? It's the same people who come to help me at that time. So it's good to have inspirations who actually come out there and help you out, because like that's the reason why I look up to them, right? It's because they are so helpful in terms of the advice that they give, in terms of just brainstorming with you and things like that.
Yeah. So I mean, like, you know, having this healthy environment around where, you know, you help each other and give advices is really very important, because you should not really look like, oh, it's like, you know, competitive and a rivalry, because at this point, everyone is helping each other. And even as a startup, your aim is to help the community out there.
Mm-hmm.
Right now at this stage, how do you really define success? How do you really evaluate that you're going in the right direction? Because, you know, it's too early to see the metrics, or it's very early to see the outside world's success meters. How do you actually, you know that you're in the right direction?
That's a very good question, but the only person who can tell us if we are in the right direction is our customers, right? If they are using our product, like I call this a lifestyle intervention. If in a course of their day, our product comes in the middle, like if 30 minutes or 40 minutes, they use our product on a daily basis, if they visit a Discord server, or if they come for one of our events, or if they, you know, check out WhatsApp groups, if one of that intervention is happening every single day, then that means we're doing something right. Because people value their time. Now, people can spend that time partying. People can spend that time going to the mall. People can spend that time studying. There's so many things you can do with your time, right? But if Blue Learn is coming into their life every single day at some point in time, that means we are having some sort of impact, right? So that's what we measure, like in terms of engagement. How long is a person engaging with us? How much exposure are we getting as a brand in front of someone? And how, like, if it's useful only, then they'll actually come for whatever we do, right? Either be clubs or events or competitions or things like that. So yeah, I would say engagement in terms of number of minutes spent per person per day is what we are measuring. If that increases, then it means you're doing something right.
Okay. And what, according to you, do you think is BlueLearn's most significant achievement right now?
Oh, I would not say funding at all. Like, never ever say funding is an achievement, because it just helps you. I've told this a lot of times. It just helps you reach your goal faster. It doesn't help you. It doesn't like solve the problem. It would not make you rich. It would not, you know, like change your product much. Like, everything will remain pretty much the same. Only the rate at which you do things increases a lot, right? You get resources to hire more. You get resources to, you know, buy softwares that you were not able to afford earlier or things like that. It just gives you that leeway, that ability to experiment a lot, but then it's not going to solve the problem for you. Money does not solve problems. So at least for us, the achievement that we see is building community first. Like, there are so many startups today saying that they are community based, but then very few actually execute on the community, right? Very few have an engaged community. And we have been really lucky, like kudos to our community members for, you know, participating. We have an engaged community. People come here often and people love coming here, and that's what we want to keep growing. So yeah, I think that's the one thing that we did right, and I wouldn't call it an achievement. I would just call it a good start. It's a very long way to go.
So like, what would be your immediate top priority, like, you know, your to-do list? What would be your next plan of action to do?
We want to make this very exciting events, clubs, platform. So just launching more clubs, launching anything that engages audience live and just gives them some sort of value in their life. So in terms of like immediate goals, it'll be launching clubs. We're launching quiz club and music club pretty soon. So that'll be like at the top of the checklist.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. So like, you know, providing knowledge, insights, with you know, sort of interactive, in an interactive manner is what I think. Even in like everywhere now, this new term has come, entertainment plus information, infotainment. So I mean, like, congratulations to you and all the very best. Now that we've come to an end of this podcast, any parting words that you would like to, you know, part to our young entrepreneurs watching this, any piece of advice you'd like to give?
Yeah, I'd say keep building side projects and don't be afraid to code. Like right now, I used to code a year back and those were like some of the best times. Right now I'm not coding, but I'm trying to get back into it, not getting time for it. But then, by the way, not everyone has to code. That's not something that I'm saying, but just learning to build stuff, right? Now this could be learning to design on Figma or learning to ideate good products and draw them, or it could be even coding, like just learning to build stuff. And being part of the entire process is phenomenal. So no need of building a startup. Maybe that could be a thing you can do, but then work on side projects and work on a lot of side projects. And one day these side projects might become into full-fledged businesses. So even if you take up a job, you'll have this money-making machine on the side, which helps you survive. So yeah, that's what I would say. Just gather a bunch of smart friends, start building side projects, and also be part of good communities like BlueLearn.
Thank you so much. I'm pretty sure BlueLearn's going to go big. I really understand and stand by the BlueLearn's vision. And all the very best. Thank you for your time. Thank you for showing.
Thank you so much, Drew.
Podcast.
And that was the podcast, guys. We promised you, didn't we? We are here to connect you with the young entrepreneurs and industry experts, so that they can share their experiences and current age problems and how they tackle them, so that you can pave your path easily. And if you still haven't subscribed, do let us know in the comment section, because we are here to improve. And until next time, this is Priyank Arora signing off.